This sermon is from the series, The Unexpected King, the Gospel of Matthew. We hope that you are encouraged and challenged by it.
When I was a kid, my parents had a way of keeping me busy during the summer and offering me money. We lived in Iowa, and we had a small pasture and some sheep, and there was a thistle patch. Now, if you know anything about thistles, you got one, you got a patch. And so my parents would pay me, I forget what it was, probably 10 cents or a quarter. That was a lot of money back then for a thistle. But here's the deal. When I cut the thistle, and if I wanted to get paid, I needed to bring the entire plant, including the root. Because you know, if anything about thistles, if you just chop the top, the root still remains. And in a week or two, those thistles will come right back, maybe even stronger than ever. From the outside, you can look at it if I would just take the chop and the machete and just cut it, and it would look like I had removed the issue. But the fact of the matter is that I needed to do something more. I needed to get that shovel out and dig it deeper. And so I got pretty good at pushing that little foot in, wiggling it, and pulling that thistle out with a pair of gloves, obviously. Because if I didn't take care of the root, then the fact of the matter is that the problem would still remain. I think a lot of us actually sometimes approach our spiritual lives the same way. We can take the easy route, and we can deal with those things that are on the surface that are easy for us to deal with and feel like we're doing okay. But Jesus, in this section of the Sermon on the Mount, actually in the next couple of weeks and in the month, is going to challenge us to go deeper and to look at the root of the issue. We are in a new section of the Sermon on the Mount. We had finished up the Beatitudes, and last week, Jesus talked about how he fulfilled the law, but he's going to continue to talk about the law, in particular the moral law that we talked about last week. And in it, he's going to say, this is what the law is, this is the outside appearance, but then he's going to ask us to look deeper in our hearts and look at the roots that are happening there. And today, he's going to have us look at the roots of murder, which is why I have the title that we have here today. So if you are new to Crossway, we're thankful that you're here. We just preached through a book of the Bible. We are currently going through Matthew. As I said earlier, we're in the section of Matthew called the Sermon on the Mount, in which Jesus has been teaching repeatedly to his disciples and some other people around it. But this is Matthew 5, 21 through 26. You can read along in your pew Bibles. We read the NIV, but this is the word of the Lord. You have heard that it is said to the people long ago, you shall not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to a brother or sister, Raca, is answerable to the court. And anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them, and then come and offer your guilt, or your gift, not guilt. Maybe you have to deal with the guilt earlier. Settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court, but do it while you're still together on the way, or your adversary may hand you over to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison. Truly I tell you that you will not get out until you have paid the last penny. Well, we are in this new section, and we are going to have 6 weeks where Jesus has a kind of a pattern here. And you can see every section in this group, all the way through Matthew 5 and 6, where it begins with the phrase, you have heard that it was said. And really what Jesus is doing is he is reaffirming the command that the people of Israel, the Jewish people, and his listeners would have known. As we said last week, they were very familiar with the laws, and they were very familiar with the Ten Commandments and the moral component of the law. And so every time Jesus will begin this section, and he'll say, you've heard it said to the people long ago, you shall not whatever. And in today, our command is simple, do not murder. And I want you to see that Jesus affirms the original command, don't kill anybody. It's right there in the Ten Commandments, Exodus 20, verse 13. I think most of us would agree that killing somebody is not a good idea. We understand because of our livelihood, and because, as we said in earlier weeks, our culture has been rooted in Judeo-Christian values for a long time. Christianity had that ability to be salt and light in the world. And so it's influenced the way that we look at things. We see that there are people who are made in God's image and that we shouldn't just go around killing people. We sometimes forget that that was not always the case in some of the cultures before. But it's an important thing for us to remember. But Jesus doesn't just end there. He doesn't say, just don't murder, because if we would look at our lives, I think most of us could probably say we haven't done that. And it would look like the field that I talked about of just having the top thistle chopped off. But Jesus is saying, no, what you need to do is you need to remove those things that are deeper, the roots of murder. And what he's going to do is he's going to look an issue, an extended a call to deeper things. And the first one of the issues is to get rid of danger, of anger. He says, I tell you that anyone who is angry with their brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Now, in this thing, we see, he says here that it's important for us to make sure that we remove anger in our lives. If there's an image, you can think of murder as that full-blown thistle in bloom, but there's a root below the surface that oftentimes we don't see that begins that process. And that root, that thing, is anger. And anger, I would say, can kind of serve as a check engine light. That there's root of murder, this anger thing, is lurking behind the scenes. Oftentimes when we're driving along, there may be an issue with our car and we may not even notice it. Maybe the oil pressure is slightly off, or maybe there's something going on in an electrical system, and it's a little blurb that we don't notice, and we can miss it. And the same thing is true in our own lives. If we think that we can just deal with the external issues, the external anger, then we miss what's going on underneath the surface. And Jesus is saying that anger is that thing underneath the surface. I love this quote by Dallas Willard in The Divine Conspiracy. He says, the primary function of anger in life is to alert me of my obstruction to my will and immediately raise alarm and resistance even before I have time to think about it. Anger is one of those things that come on us really quickly. And what Willard is saying is that oftentimes it's showing us that things aren't going the way that we want it to. We don't get angry when life goes the way we want it to. We get angry when it doesn't, right? Now, the reality is that we need to check that. We need to ask, what is it? What is the reason below the surface, the thing in us that is lurking, that is causing me to become angry? Now, I need to admit that there's righteous anger. Mark 3, verse 4, and if you look at a couple of different situations when Jesus clears out the temple, it's clear that Jesus, who lived the perfect life, is angry. In this situation, in Mark 4, the Pharisees are angry that he's healing somebody on the Sabbath, and Jesus is distressed. And he says it this way. He says, but they remained silent, and he looked around at them in anger, deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts. And then he said to the man, stretch out your arm, and he healed them and was restored. So there is a righteous anger. There is an anger that it may sees an injustice and wants to do something. And sometimes when we feel this kind of sensation of anger, it can be because there's an injustice. Now, I need to also add a clarity about this, and I would say that probably over 90% of the time that we get angry, it's not really as righteous as we think. And we can actually fool ourselves into thinking it's righteous when actually it's self-righteousness, and maybe there are more mixed motives than we would care to admit. And so while I want to admit that there is such thing as righteous anger, we need to make sure that we just don't go to that as our default, but that we actually ask the tough questions. What is the reason why I'm angry? Anger actually often results, I would say, from a wounded ego. Oftentimes, there is something. Life isn't going the way that we want it to. It throws us for a loop, and we're hurt. Our ego is bruised. Or maybe somebody doesn't give us the respect that we think that we deserve. Or maybe they talk more shortly with us, and we take it personally. My guess is that majority of the time, our anger is not as righteous as we think it is, but rather it's more about our own psyche and our own anger lurking below the surface. And that is really what's causing it. That's why Proverbs 13 says, when there is strife, there is pride. Usually when there's strife, there's anger. That's also why Psalm 35, verse 8 says, refrain from anger and turn away from wrath. Do not fret, because it only leads to evil. That's why Jesus says, I understand that the command is do not murder, but he's going to push us to think about it deeper, because anger is the beginning that leads to murder. Murder doesn't just happen. There's something that is the initial cause. There's a root to it. And he says that root is anger. The classic example of this actually is in Genesis 4, where Cain and Abel are there. And they give their offerings. And God is pleased with Abel's offering. And Cain is ticked off. And he's angry. And the Lord asks him, why are you angry? He says, do what's right and it will be accepted. But if you don't do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. Anger shifts to murder as Cain kills Abel right there in the moment. And so we need to be careful here, because we understand that anger is the root of murder. And that is what we need to be dealing with. And so Jesus is going to call us to say, don't only look at the external thing, but look at the roots that are underneath it. And anger is that one. So the question that I have for you that you can wrestle with this morning and throughout this week is, who are you angry with? And who do you get angry with most easily? And why do you think that is? Ask yourself those hard questions. Is it really because of this is a righteous anger? Or is there a mixed bag? And could it be that my own ego is wounded and there's more going on below the surface? That maybe it's not as perfect as I think, or my anger isn't as righteous, but maybe there's something deeper going on, and there could be something that I am not getting my way, or something that is easily bruised, or that is happening, and we need to wrestle with it. This is the call that we have in this text. Jesus says, don't just deal with the external things, but do the heart excavation. Dig deeper, push that shovel down into our heart, and think about the roots of those things. I would say that if anger is the root, contempt is the first sprout of the thistle that forms. And I think that's why Jesus uses this another analogy here, where he says, not only do we have to remove anger as part of this command with murder, but also he extends another deeper call to get rid of contempt for others. He says it right there. He says, again, anyone who says brother or sister raka is answerable to the court, and anyone who says fool will be in danger of the fire of hell. I love this quote by Dallas Willard in Divine Conspiracy. He says, in anger, I want to hurt you. In contempt, I don't care whether you are hurt or not. Or at least so I say, you're not worth consideration one way or the other. We can be angry at someone without denying their worth, but contempt makes it easier for us to hurt them or see them further degraded. Does it make sense? So what he's saying is, you can be mad at somebody, and it may ruin your relationship, and it may create some strife in it. But the minute that you get to contempt, this thing where you devalue them, or you do that either in your heart or with your words, something's different. That's how murder goes. You may be angry at them, but when you start to think that their worth is diminished, that's when you get to the spot where you actually are capable of murder. And he says, that's why we need to root out the root of anger, but we also need to make sure that the sprout of contempt doesn't form in our own hearts. And it's interesting that he says this, that he divides it into two different kinds of contempt. I would say the first one is raka. And raka means you're empty, worthless. You're not altogether there. And really what he's saying in that is that you are dehumanizing them, and you're saying that they are worthless to me. Now, I got to admit, there are all kinds of times where I probably have this, but the one that I struggle with the most is in the middle of driving, right? I mean, when I'm in the middle of driving, especially, let's say, I had it the other day. I was driving on 72nd Avenue, and somebody went around me, and I right away in my head, I'm like, whatever word. I don't remember what it was. It wasn't a swear word, but it probably wasn't good. Aren't you so glad that you got that one car in front of me? And then when they pulled out in front and made the car go to the other car, made the car go on the ditch, I said even worse things. Now that one might have a little bit of justice in it. It was not an issue. You almost caused an accident. But the fact of the matter is in that moment, my mind devalues that person and puts a label on them about who they are and their intent of their actions. I think the reality is we can do that with other people. Whether we care to admit it or not, I think that our society is in a spot where anger and contempt is all around us. it is somewhat of the sea in which we live, and we take it for granted because we hear it and see it on social media and all these different things that we don't even notice it anymore. And we need to be careful that we don't just not notice it out there, but we don't notice it in our own heart. When I'm driving and when that buddy cuts me off, for me to make that instant valuation of who they are and in a negative way is not Christ-like in the very least. And Jesus says that we need to root that out. Now, it's interesting in this text, he actually ramps it up. He says, if you murder somebody, you're going to have to seek justice. He uses the idea of a legal court, and he says anger's that way. He says, if you call somebody fool, you need to go in front of the Sanhedrin. But he says, if you take it to the absolute next level where you call somebody a fool, well, then you're up to the fire pit of hell. And I think what he's saying here is that each one of these things is that sprout growing further and further and further up, and we need to be careful about it. He says, you fool. Now, for you and I, we think fool is kind of the, I don't know. I got to be careful because I'm a preacher preaching a sermon. Maybe idiot, it would be that's the way we view it. But in the Bible, it's a little bit different than that. There's a bigger connotation to it. Fool is like the ultimate denigrative comment you can make, especially as a Jewish believer. Because if you were a fool, it basically meant that you weren't really a believer. We see that in Psalm 14, the fool says in his heart, there is no God. They're corrupt and their deeds are vile. There's no one who does good. And so when you and I read this text, we may think when we say somebody's foolish, like I did in the car, that that's what he's implying. No, what he's saying is that this person has absolutely no value or worth, and there's no way that they can even have a relationship with God. He says, when it grows from the root of anger to the sprout of contempt, where you call somebody an idiot or raka, but you go to the next level and you call them a fool to where there's no value or worth or they're an enemy of God, well, that's a whole nother level. And that, is, he says, is another level that we need to deal with. The thing is we may not use those words, but we may write people off completely. And we may have contempt to where we don't see any good in their life whatsoever. It's just not an instantaneous, hey, they're acting foolish in our term, not the biblical term. But rather what we see is that they have no value. There's no way that they're going to change. And this is just the way that life is. This is how contempt grows in our hearts. And Jesus says that we need to be careful because it's not about the external thistle of murder. It's about the root of anger and the sprout of contempt. That's what forms into this blossoming thing. And if you focus just on chopping down that thistle and not dealing with the anger or the sprout of contempt in our own hearts, it can easily develop into something bigger. That's why he says, I can affirm the Old Testament commandment, but I want you to go deeper, because that deeper thing shows the ideal that God has, a life where we view each other in the correct way and we don't diminish them because we see that they have value and worth as fellow image bearers in Christ. And this is what we need to wrestle with in our own hearts. He gives us a remedy, though, and that is simply to work towards reconciliation. We see this in the second, within the last four verses. He begins by saying, if someone is upset with you, deal with it immediately. He says, therefore, if you're offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them and then come and offer your gift. I want you to realize just the bigness of this. In the Old Testament, these offerings were big deals. This wasn't like just going to church every week. There's a rhythm where they would bring a sin offering to pay for their sins. And Jesus says, if you are in the midst of that big moment and you're right there where the priest is about ready to do this sacrifice and for you to feel the grace that's offered through the system, stop in the midst of it. Quick, leave and go deal with that person immediately. And I want you to see, it's not even if you've offended, it's if that person is upset and angry with you. Jesus says, don't just help root out the root of anger and contempt in your own heart, but if you know that somebody's dealing with it, you need to try and deal with it immediately and try and reconcile with them. And then he ends with another one where he kind of highlights that it's better to deal with it ourselves than to let it escalate. In Matthew 5, he says it right there. Settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court. He uses a legal context. He says, do it while you're still together on the way. Don't wait till the judge rules in. Now, he gives this thing where it may escalate and you may have to be thrown into prison and pay every last penny. He's saying, it's serious. This is a serious offense and you need to deal with it. You literally could take the judgment, but don't wait for somebody else to deal with it for you. Deal with it yourselves and with that person in the middle of the way that you're moving. You need to get there quickly and deal with it right away. And he says, settle that matter right away. That's the point that he's trying to make. I want you to see that there's a common theme here, and that is that a delay is the enemy of a reconciliation. Enemy is the delay of reconciliation. I have this image here, but I want you to think about this in this. Most of us know it's a wound, right? It can start off as a scratch, but if that thing gets infected, then it gets worse and you have to bandage it. And if you continue to not do anything, it gets worse and worse until literally you can get sepsis. And you can have your arm removed if you don't deal with it correctly. And so what the call here is that we need to not let the cut and the wounds of anger and contempt fester in our own hearts, that they grab a hold and they do more damage in our own hearts than we care to admit. We don't let these things grow and fester until they've overcome us and have more of a detrimental effect than what we think. That's the point that he's trying to make here in our text. He says, don't delay, deal with the reconciliation right away, and delaying actually is the enemy of reconciliation. And so what he's saying too is that we need to do our part. Well, let's just go back to here. I think this is why Paul says in Ephesians 4, in your anger do not sin, do not let the sun go down while you're still angry, and do not give the devil a foothold. Now, let me just lay this out. It doesn't mean that you necessarily have to deal with it that night. Sometimes, especially if you have an argument at the end of the night, the best thing you can do is sleep. Because with two tired people who are angry, it's probably not the best time to have reconciliation, okay? Now, is it better to not sleep on it? 100%. But the point is, deal with it quickly. That's the point. He also says in this text, if you look at it, that we need to do our part and trust God with the rest. I love Romans 12, verse 18. It says, we talked about this with peacemakers as well. It says, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. There's a caveat here. You and I are responsible for our stuff. Okay, we are responsible for looking at our own hearts and trying to remove the anger and the bitterness and the contempt in it. That's what Jesus is calling to us in the text. And our goal is to move towards reconciliation with that person. But I want you to notice that forgiveness is the first step to that, and that begins with you and I. Forgiveness starts with us. We can forgive people for things that they have done and for the hurts that they have caused us, even if they're dead or if we have no relationship with them. And I'm not saying that this is easy. We have people in our church and we have people who in our lives, we have gone through difficult things. We have people say nasty stuff about us and had no reason. They have denigrated our character and not ruined our reputation. We have people who have done despicable things, abused us, sexually abused us, and hurt us in harmful ways. And I'm in no way saying that we need to minimize that hurt. But actually, I think when we look at those things, we need to admit that those are horrendous things and they are not right things and they are effects of sin in our world. But we also need to realize that when Jesus is encouraging us to remove the anger root, he's trying to say, don't let that evil thing have more of a control than it needs to in your own heart. And we need to try, and he says, you need to move in that process to do what you can to try and deal with it. And it begins with forgiveness. Colossians 3:13 says, bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against one another, forgive as the Lord forgave us. And in 2 Corinthians 5, it says that God was reconciling the world to himself, and he's committed us to the message of reconciliation. Even if you may be sitting here and saying, but Brad, you don't know what's been done to me. And you know what? As I said, there are terrible things that have been done. And they are difficult for us to give up. And there are difficult things for us to just wrestle with. And I'm not saying it's an easy thing. But I can tell you, the more that we allow those things to consume our thoughts, the more that we meditate on those, and the more that we allow them to control us, and we let that anger and bitterness fester, it does not make us more Christ-like. It actually is something that the devil can use to move us and shift us in the wrong direction. And that's why Jesus says we need to root out that thistle of anger. And it may be that the first step to forgiveness is us just saying, Lord, I am so angry and I hate that person because of what they've done. Just help me to begin the process of forgiveness. It may be that that's just the prayer that we can start. And then slowly but surely, as time goes on, we can work through it more deeply. But forgiveness is something that we can do. Now, reconciliation requires two people. We see this in Matthew 18, verse 15. It says, if your brother and sister sins, go and point out their fault just between the two of you, and if they listen to you, you've won them over. And what that means is that your relationship is moving on the path of restoration. Oftentimes, I think what happens is we will get to the spot where people, we will work on forgiveness, we will bring that issue with people, and they won't own their own stuff, and so it's hard for us to reconcile. Is it true? It's hard for us to reconcile if people are unwilling to own their own stuff, and then we have to process through it, and it's complicated. I can't give you an easy answer here. But I want you to notice that our first step towards moving in that direction is us moving towards forgiveness. Reconciliation may require a two-way street and two people to do that. And so it may be that you do everything right. You move towards forgiveness. You make those steps. You talk to them, and you do what you need to do. And you don't get the happy answer, ending. Reconciliation doesn't happen. That doesn't mean that you haven't done your part of this text. Actually, it's what Romans 12 says. It says, as far as you can do, live at peace with others. You can't control their actions. Also, we need to make it clear that reconciliation does not mean that relationship automatically goes back to the normal right away. Okay? There may be times where you have to create some boundary with that person because they may have unowned the issues, but there's some stuff that you need to work out. And the two of you, when you're together, it brings up these things inside of you, and you need to create some distance, and that's okay. It may be, especially in the case of an abuser or things like that, that you absolutely keep your distance from you. You absolutely. Reconciliation may be where you just get to the spot where you don't hate them, but it doesn't mean you ever have to spend time with them. Does that make sense? And so reconciliation is very different, and reconciliation isn't always possible. So when I talk about this text that Jesus has here, our job is forgiveness and to try and be on the path towards reconciliation, but it may not mean that restoration is possible. Does that make sense? There's three different levels there. Okay. Well, what's the motivation for what this does? I think we have to own that the motivation is ultimately Christ's love for us. Ephesians 4 says, get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger. You want a different word for contempt? It's bitterness. And that anger. Paul says, remove that. And he says, why? Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other just as in Christ God forgave you. Here's the thing. We will never be able to deal with anger and contempt when we stand in a self-righteous spot where we view ourselves as better than the other person. Now, we may not have made that mistake. That person did terrible things to us. But we still need to always remember our brokenness and the fact that we actually hurt people too. And that is what the gospel reminds us of. The reason why we can get rid of all bitterness and rage and anger is because of and be kind and compassionate to one another is because Christ was kind and compassionate to us. Christ didn't wait for us to get our act together. That's the beauty of the gospel. Christ didn't wait till we get our life together and we really want to search after him to die on the cross. No, he literally left heaven itself in all its grandness and glory and gave it up and took on human form. Now, that would have been a huge loss in just itself. You wouldn't think about just leaving the altar and quick rushing and going to someplace. Christ gave up heaven itself. He gave up a life where there is no sin and all the things of God, and he took on human form and he did it so he could pursue a relationship with us. And it's not when life is good or when we have our life all figured out or when that. No, it says that Christ died for us at just the right time where we're still powerless while we were ungodly. Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous person, But for a good person, someone might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this, that while we were still sinners for us. The key to us dealing with our anger and our bitterness towards the injustices that have happened to us is to remember that Christ could hold our sin against us, and he doesn't. Matter of fact, he pursued us. He didn't leave us in the spot. He pursued us. He did everything that needed to be done so that our relationship with him and with God could be restored. And the more that we allow that to just ruminate in our hearts, the more that we allow that to be our focus, the more that we'll be able to forgive people and have the and get rid of the anger and the bitterness. Sometimes it may be where that's all we can do, where we literally say, Jesus, I am so angry at them and bitter at them, and I can give you all the reasons why you shouldn't forgive them and I shouldn't forgive them, but somehow you, God, didn't treat my sins as I deserve, so just help me have your perspective so that I can extend that forgiveness to others. But I think we need to be honest that we can't just end with grace. We need to respond with what Christ has done out of gratitude for what he's done. That's what this text is all about. It's a reminder to us that we need to do the hard work of looking in our own hearts, the check engine light when it pops on, or when we feel this anger rise up, or when we see contempt around us. We need to resist the anger and the contempt. Don't get into that social media argument or the argument around your coworkers about whatever the issue is at the office or at school. Stay away from the fray as best we can. It's so easy for us. And so the call for us is that we're so in touch with the grace that God has given us that it's the thing that dictates our lives most and more and more. And it's the thing that oozes out of us because we are just so in love and so thankful for what Christ has done. And so we do two things. One, we stay alert. One of the things that I think is interesting about this text is that he brings up multiple cases. Literally, one is in the middle of the church and one is in the middle of the workplace. And he says, if any of those situations where you're aware of this issue, you need to deal with it. And we may never know when the Spirit will convict us. And we need to make sure that we are open to it. It doesn't, the check engine light, my experience is that and check engine light on the car never is in a convenient time. Usually it's when you're traveling cross country, right? Usually it's when you're on your way and you really got to go someplace and you don't have to deal with it. But when we're convicted, it's just like that check engine light. The more we drive it, the more there's a potential for peril. And the more for us, the more that we push away that conviction of the Holy Spirit, there's peril to us. And so the question that I have for you to wrestle with this week is, what anger and contempt do we need to deal with? What anger and contempt do we need to deal with? What are those things that we need to address and not sweep it under the rug? And the other thing is just act now. Act now. Extend the grace that you've been freely given. Now, again, I am not saying that this is an easy process, but don't short-circuit it either. If you know anything about the Bible, you know that Jesus told this parable in Matthew 18 about a servant who had this huge debt. It was an insurmountable debt. It was like let's just say a $3 trillion debt, and the master gave it away and said, you know what? He begs the master for forgiveness, and the master gives him freedom, and then the guy comes, and on his way out from having that great freedom, that great gift given to him, he meets a servant who owes him $500, and he's after him, and he says, how dare you? You owe me the cash. And the master hears about it, and he says, you wicked servant, I canceled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have shown mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you? God wants to have such a grip of our hearts that we understand the great debt that he's given us, that the debts of other people don't have as huge of an impact as they could. That's what he wants us to see. Because he doesn't want us to have a life full of angerness and bitterness and contempt. He wants us to have a life of grace and mercy because that's the life that he originally intended us to be. We all have people in our life that we struggle with contempt. We all have life that we're angry at. We have people that quite frankly drive us nuts and quite frankly oftentimes those who are closest to us. But that is what we need to wrestle with, and that's the call that we have. That's the call of our text here today. To not push off the warning signs of anger, to not deal with contempt, to not look at our lives and think that just because we haven't murdered anybody that our life is fine. But to do the hard work that Jesus has asked, to look at the roots, that are developing inside of our hearts, the roots of bitterness and contempt and anger towards others. And when we see it, we're quick to bring it to the cross and say, Jesus, I don't know what to deal with this. Help me to show mercy. Help me to show forgiveness. Help me to act now. That's all we can do. But here's the powerful thing. Is the Spirit of God is at work. If you are a believer, the Spirit of God at work is at work in your life, and He will help you deal with it. It may take time. It may take steps. It may take a long lifetime. But He can help us slowly but surely through the power of His Spirit, help us deal with the anger and the bitterness and the contempt that's there. We just need to allow Him to continue to work in our lives. That is what the cross reminds us of, the great gift that God has given us, but also that the Spirit of God is at work in our hearts, and He can help us overcome these things that Jesus lays out. So this week, I encourage you just to wrestle through those questions that we have, and let's be a people who aren't afraid to just don't deal with just the external stuff, but the chopping of the thistle with the machete, but rather are willing to do the excavation of our hearts. And not just the excavation of other people's hearts, that's what, but the excavation of our own, to do the digging there and to ask ourselves, what are those things that we need to wrestle with? In the midst of all of us, let's never lose sight of God's grace, that His grace is greater than our own sin, and that grace can help us to deal with that anger and that bitterness towards others and to move towards a spot of forgiveness and reconciliation. Let's not buy into our culture's definition of what's right or wrong, that we can be angry and bitter towards whoever we want because they deserve it, because they're raka or fools. But let's view everyone in an image of God, and let's work to give them the grace that has been extended to us. Let's pray.
You have just watched a sermon from Crossway Church in Battleground, Washington. We hope that you enjoyed it, and we'd love to have you come join us for a worship service on Sunday at 10 a.m. at 311 North Parkway Avenue in Battleground, Washington. If you'd like to find more information about us online, you can find it at crosswaychurchwa.com.